Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm your host, Sandy Fowler, and wanted to share with you a comment we had recently. Natalie jotted a note about episode 76, why raising boys is different, and her comment said, yes, 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 this is so true. Thank you for addressing this issue of feminizing our sons by expecting them to act like the girls. It provokes me to frustration and anger. This is spot on, not to be confused with expecting obedience and instilling self-control, but allowing for boys to develop as men and into men. We definitely need more male influence on our sons, particularly in education and mentorship. Thank you for discussing this. Well, you are so welcome, Natalie, and thank you for sharing your thoughts. Remember, Mighty Parents, that I love to hear from you, whether you're rating and reviewing the show on your podcast player, commenting on a show at mightyparenting.com, or sending me an email. I always appreciate your feedback and your requests for topics to be covered. Try to get those covered for you as well. So thank you. Also, remember, pop on over to mightyparenting.com to grab your free email series on communicating with your teen. And speaking of communicating, this can be such a big challenge. Heck, just living with a tween teen or 20-something can pose a big challenge. Just when you think that the struggles are behind you, our kids will start a whole new phase of asserting their independence. You know, we get through the teen and toddler years and then the dealing with school and all those adjustments, and you're like, okay, you know, they're getting older and they can start to think a little bit more and this will get easier. And that's when they go, nope, time to become independent. And this is definitely one of the challenges that Tom and I are working through at the moment. We have definitely some differences in viewpoint with one of our daughters as to what she needs to do. We see one set, one path, and she sees another one. And we've been working on it individually, together, and with her. And I find that we do okay accepting her view until we don't see results. And then we find ourselves wanting to jump in and fix everything and tell her what to do. And one thing we have learned here from our experts in Mighty Parenting is that definitely isn't the way we want to handle it. So it gets tough. You know, advice is a sticky point too. She doesn't necessarily want to hear advice from us. It just depends on how she sees things on that day, in that moment, and about that topic. So when we aren't handling things well, we end up in a battle of wills or arguments with her. And today's guest has some help for all of us in that arena. Her name is Lori Warren. Lori is a change agent for empowered well-being in body, mind, and spirit. She works as a corporate consultant, wellness clinician, and a sought-after speaker, and she is regularly featured as an expert in the media. She is the author of the new book, Wild World, Joyful Heart, Unlock Your Power to Create Health and Joy. And Lori's work is grounded in three foundational beliefs. One being that the body is a self-organizing organism that's hardwired for healing. Two, that our mind can be used as either a bridge or a barrier in our quest for well-being. And three, that what matters most is who we are as we move through this world. And today she's going to help us understand how those principles play into our lives so that we can have less arguing and more well-being in our family. And Lori, I'm excited to dig into this topic with you today. So welcome to Mighty Parenting.
Thank you, Sandy. That was a great introduction, and I'm very excited to talk about this topic, especially having parented four teenagers.
Yeah, we were talking before the show. So you have great experience in this teen and 20-something range and still actually have two teenagers in the mix here.
I do. And I've had a wide range. So I have two boys and two girls. So I am having both of the experience of the genders, which are different, even though when they were born, I was like, they're the same. I want them to be different. And then I figured out that they really were different. And I also am a step parent and a biological parent. So I have a pretty I've had a lot of interesting opportunity to grow as a person.
Well, and a lot of experience, personal experience that you can bring to the discussion today. So I love that. I love that you have such a varied background for yourself.
Yeah. And it's interesting because so one of the chapters in the book you mentioned, Wild World, Joyful Heart, is called Mindful Relating. And that chapter is really all about what we're talking about today, which is less arguing, more well-being, and keeping connection in relationships.
Okay. So as I said in the beginning, I'm interested in this, how do we deal with this arguing? Because that's a common theme when it comes to teenagers. That is something I hear frequently from parents. And I know that, you know, a lot of my friends have experienced that. We've certainly have had our moments over the years. Can you, you said that this chapter helps with that, with this idea of mindful relating. How does that play into these arguments that we're having with our kids?
I think, you know, and we can just both say up front, this is a highly complex topic and we could probably talk about it for 5 hours and not even dig into the juiciest part. But I think one of the main things that, or a few of the main things that we can do to promote connection, that's really what we're looking to do in communicating with our teenager, is promote connection, right? They don't, you know, they don't need to necessarily be told, you know, how to clean their room anymore. It doesn't mean they do clean it. But the point is, like, they're young adults, like they're moving towards adulthood, right? So if we can focus on the fact that we want to be connected with them and move into what I call we first relating, W-E, instead of me first relating. So me first relating is when we're thinking about our agenda for the conversation versus going into it thinking about our agenda, meaning myself and my teenager. And just that one shift in mindset, because I can tell you from experience how many times I've gone into a conversation ready to tell them how it is, and because I'm so smart, because I'm older than them and I've parented and blah, blah, blah. And the truth of the matter is kids come in with a whole lot of innate genius and wisdom. And the truth is that it's important to be mindful that part of a teenager's job, like literally the job description that they get when they about 12 or 13 and somebody that like invisible person hands them this resume that says part of your job is to argue with your parents. And, and it's true. Like it literally is, because it's how they're learning about themselves. Like they're learning about themselves by pushing against everything that is parenting, you as a parent. And it doesn't mean that they're really pushing against you. It just means that they're trying to figure out who they are separate from sort of the family unit and you as a parent. And so even though it can be hard in the moment, approaching the arguing as a necessary construct in parenting can help. Because I think a lot of us, Sandy, feel when our kids are argumentative and pushing back and, you know, being kind of jerky, we can start to say to ourselves, oh my God, I'm a bad parent. You know, why is my kid talking to me like this? Is this not okay? When, and then we go into when I was young, if I talked to my parent like that, I would have got knocked in the next week, blah, blah, blah. And I think it's important to just have some gentleness with ourselves about the realities of being a parent and what teenagers are looking to do.
Well, that's really interesting. Correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the things I heard you say in there was that our goal isn't to stop or end the arguing.
We are.
Did I get that?
So much. Yeah, because here's why, right? Like, I'm all about let's be realistic about what is. And what is that teenagers are literally wired to argue with us. So if we go into teenagerhood expecting to not have arguments, we're just setting ourselves up for suffering and pain because it's unrealistic. It's like saying to someone that wants to lose weight, like, oh, you can never ever eat another cookie again for the next 10 years. They're like, oh my God, what? Like, it's just not realistic. So automatically they're whatever, you know, food lifestyle you might be promoting for them. If you're telling them you can never ever have anything that you love, then already they're just out the door. And it's the same thing with parenting and arguing. Like, they're gonna argue with you. And what's hard is that sometimes they choose the end of the day when you've had a long day at work and traffic was terrible and the whole world's on your last nerve, and that's when they choose to get argumentative. And we can get very reactive in those moments, and it really helps, not always, you know, doesn't always work, but it always helps to take a deep breath and say, it's okay, this actually isn't about me. This is about their growth and their journey to becoming their own independent person.
And I also just wanted to clarify, in my own mind, I'm stretching the idea of argument. I'm not talking about necessarily knock down, drag out fights. This can be eye rolling, the sarcastic comments, all those little things. And I know that with one of my girls, we learned just when to cut it off. So we don't do what a lot of people would call arguing. We just, you know, you get a couple of the looks from her and in the tone and whatnot, and you go, you know what? I'm just not even going there. This is not worth it. But I feel like that is, it's still that cycle you're talking about, because it's still about she's pushing back and I'm just going, okay, she's going to push back. I don't need to push my agenda here. She can do whatever she wants to do. She can be happy or unhappy about whatever I said. That's fine. I don't need to push that. I love that you use that term, agenda. I don't need to make her see it my way. I don't need to make her like my way. Things just are what they are. And it's okay that she's doing this.
Not only is it okay, but I would say that in having whatever we want to call it, arguments, disagreements, pushback, you know, whatever, they are learning, you're teaching them how to do that in relationships for the rest of their life. And I think you'd find, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think you'd find that the vast majority of people argue with their spouse and their friends the same way they argued with their parents. And that can turn out to be really great or really terrible.
Well, that's where I was going. I was like, okay, so what is important in here is what? You know, if this is a learning process for them, what is it important that we do try to instill or impart or hold a line, draw a boundary?
So I think boundaries is a really good word, and I do want to touch on that word. But I think, you know, some of just like out of the gate, some of the things we've heard, like choose your battles, really important, especially the older, the more they get into teenagerhood, the closer they get to the end of the high school, choose your battles carefully. And I also think a really important thing with teenagers, and this is a modeling thing and a respect thing, is whenever possible, say you're sorry. So like my youngest child is particularly gifted at making me lose my cool. And
what a gift.
Very special talent. And I will circle back a few hours later and say, you know what? I regret what I said. It was uncool, and I apologize for speaking to you like that. And the super cool thing is, Sandy, I sometimes will get in text. We get in an argument in the morning. He drives to school. I'm at work, and I get a text saying, hey, Mom, sorry about this morning. I could have done better. And, you know, teaching our kids that saying you're sorry is not only okay, but great, and also bridges relationships as opposed to creating barriers. Is really important. And I kind of launched into that when you said boundaries and some of the most important things that I think that we as parents can keep in mind as we go into dialogue with our children, whether it's, you know, what we consider positive, like a nice discussion, or quote unquote negative when we're having disagreements or arguing, whatever you want to call it. Three really important things that I point out in the mindful relating chapter in my book is go into it, be clear on your intention. Intention is really important. What is your intention? Is your intention? And sometimes, honestly, be honest with yourself. Like sometimes with my youngest, I'm like, my intention is to communicate that I'm boss of this darn house. Not a great intention. Like you're already asking for, because now you're into control and all of that stuff. So being honest with ourselves and then checking ourselves, all right, do I want to stay with that intention? Is that we first? Is that going to serve, you know, the end game? Is it easier to be like, oh, my way or the highway, you know, give me your keys or get out. Is that easier? Yeah, maybe in the short term, you're just showing that you have control and that you can take things away from them. Does it build trust? Does it create connection? Probably not so much. I'm not saying you should never do that because, you know, I think I've taken his keys away once. But my point is that be really clear and honest with yourself about your intention as you go into the dialogue. And then two things that can really help is having an open heart, which means being curious. You may not know everything you think you know about what your child did, what they said, what their intentions were when they did something. So an open heart is really important. And boundaries, which you mentioned, Sandy, are also really important. So, you know, you mentioned the whole thing like, oh, sometimes there's eye rolling. And I think it's important in families to have like, here's what's okay and not okay. It's okay for you to argue with me and disagree and not be on the same page, as long as we're really clear that at the very, very, very end of the day, if I say that you need to be home at 12:30, you need to be home at 12:30. As long as you feel like I've really heard you out and why this is a special circumstance and blah, blah, blah. But then at the end, you know, when I've considered everything, if I'm still saying 12:30, that you're clear that until you're 18 and out of the house or what, you know, whatever that may be, you know, these are my boundaries. Or like I have a boundary, you may not say, I have this thing about the word whatever. So none of my four kids have ever allowed to been, you know, the thing where you're arguing and then you say, well, I asked you to pick up your room and I need you to do it. And they say, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is
with the accompanying eye roll.
Right. That is a no fly zone for me because it's a trigger for me and I can't explain why. And I don't feel like I need to. It's just everybody has their triggers. So literally whatever is like a swear word in our house. So that's a boundary for me. Don't say the word or whatever. You can say something else like I don't want to, or I'm not cleaning my room right now, anything else, just not whatever. So having boundaries and having everybody really clear about what each other's triggers and boundaries are can be really helpful.
So this is a time where they need to push those boundaries. They need to explore who they are, what they need. They're learning about communication, including arguing, including getting heated. But as a parent, we ideally are not having big, huge arguments and fights with them. We're modeling the kind of behavior that we want ourselves to exhibit and that we want them to exhibit. We want to model how to disagree with someone. Is that correct?
Yes, that is a big part of it. And also being respectful. So, you know, I'll use a personal example again. My youngest child, he's still growing. He's 6'3 now and he's still growing at a rate of an inch a night, I swear to God. and so there's a lot of testosterone running through his body right now. And he can get very sort of physically hyped up when we're having a disagreement or a stalemate. And he has recently asked me to get something for him to punch. Now, I'm a woman and a very sort of gentle woman. And that's completely out of my wheelhouse. But who am I to say what he needs to keep his rudder straight in an argument, right? Mm-hmm. So if punching something is going to make him feel better and keep his act together, then it's my job to not say, well, constructive arguing doesn't involve any kind of violence. Well, in my little world, that would be the ideal. But in the real world, that's not always the case. So let's figure out a way to help him channel those urges in a way that's constructive, makes him feel better, and doesn't, you know, make me feel uncomfortable or, you know, put holes in our walls.
Yeah, well, and actually, we did an episode with Jude Bijou from Attitude Reconstruction, where she was teaching us about releasing emotion. Mm-hmm. And that's what she taught us, was that anger is an outward moving emotion. Mm-hmm. And so to physically move that energy out of our body can be hitting something. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be, like you said, punching holes in a wall. She was mm-hmm. talking about, you know, some people will punch a pillow, or what we found, one of my girls, that's what she needs to do to move anger out. She needs to break something. She needs to hit something. And so she goes outside and gets the sticks that fall off the tree in the yard and breaks the sticks. Or we set up a spot in the basement. I had some pool noodles, and she can whack things with the pool noodle. She would really prefer a punching bag, but at the moment we don't have a good punching bag that she can actually hit. And as long as she keeps her thoughts straight and she's just in that focused area of, this is anger, I feel angry, or just kind of, you know, that guttural grunting sound, as long as she's not down there telling stories about how she hates her mother and she's so angry with her or whatever, it really does. It works great. And she can let that out. And then we can move forward, whether it was us or something else, whatever, you know, either if it was us, then we can move forward past the arguing part of it to just discussion and finding some common ground, finding that place of we, as you said, and moving forward that way. And if it was someone else, then I can help her, you know, kind of coach her through thinking through moving forward where she wants to go. But when we're super angry or super sad or super scared, our brains won't even work. So that makes a lot of sense to me, what you said, to let them, even though it may not be what we need in a situation, to let them do what they need to do. And this whole discussion has reminded me of, in the book, you talked about the idea of people becoming divided because they seek power over each other. And I'm getting glimpses of that in our conversation, where as parents, especially in the teen years, when they really start to push, you know, how much of this arguing do you think is just because we get scared about losing our position of authority?
I think there's a lot of it. And I actually, there's, you know, there's times when, again, particularly my youngest, you know, he really, it holds up a really uncomfortable mirror sometimes, right? Where he'll say flat out to me, "You're just saying that because you want control. You're just trying to control me, Mom. This actually doesn't really matter." And gosh, in that moment, I literally have to take a deep breath. And this is what I call in my book, when I'm talking about emotions, our GPS, a very important GPS. There's red light, yellow light, and green light emotions. And so when he says something like that, you know, it's definitely, we're moving into yellow light and almost into red light, where I'm like, okay, I have to take a deep breath. And then I think about what he said. I'm like, yeah, you know what? It is about control. And sometimes I can say it in that moment, and sometimes I have to circle back later. And because he is exquisitely sensitive to someone, he can sniff it out like a bloodhound when someone's literally just trying to have control over him. And he's been, you know, pointing that out since he was about three. So started to teenage years very young. And honestly, our oldest was like that too, you know, just very sensitive to control being when they're trying to spread their wings. And it's this, And there's, you know, as you and I both know, Sandy, there's no real answer. It's every parent has to feel their way along in the partial dark for having healthy boundaries, being clear about family values and what is and is not okay, and how to navigate disagreements and, you know, arguments and all that, while also, you know, maintaining that sometimes, you know, child unit, I do this for your safety, right? And so we're all trying to navigate, and that's why we have, you know, all these discussions as parents, and that's why there's this, you know, great podcast, like the Mighty Parenting podcast, where we talk about these things we navigate as parents that there really is no answer for. We're just trying to help each other understand some tools and things that can help. And one of the things I'd love to mention that I do talk about in the book that I find to be so important, especially with teenagers, is there's certain words that tend to be triggers really for everybody, but teenagers are particularly sensitive to them. Words are, you know, words can be very powerful. And words like should and shouldn't, you know, you should clean up your room. Well, who says? Why should they? Right? Another way of saying that is, one of our family values is having a neat space to live in, and I'd like you to clean up your room. You're saying the same thing, but there's something about the word should that brings up shame for people. Like you're saying that I should be, you know, I'm not something that you want me to be, right? So that's one word. Another word is always and never. So being careful not to say you never pick up your clothes. That's totally erroneous. There's no way that there's a kid that never, ever, ever picks up their clothes. Even if it was only once in their whole life, then it's not never. So instead of saying you never pick up your clothes, saying you often don't pick up your clothes and I find it really frustrating that I have to ask you. Just that tiny word change, like I've literally watched it in action, makes a really huge difference because you're not painting someone all with one brush stroke. And another thing that I found really powerful for parents is the idea of not having what I call in the book toxic certainty. And toxic certainty is where we are so positive in a factual way that we're right and that there's no wiggle room in the discussion because we're the parent and we know everything. That's toxic certainty. It doesn't serve really anybody, including ourselves. If we can go in with a little bit more of an open mind and an open heart, they sense that. Kids, as we all know, sense things far beyond the words that we're saying. So we can go into something instead of saying, no, I absolutely know that you did this for this reason, and I find that, you know, unacceptable behavior and blah, blah, blah. Instead, we might say, you know, when you spoke to me like this, this is how I felt. And I'm really curious about what led you to speak to me in that tone. And that's really hard to do. I'm not saying this is like super easy. What I'm saying is that we can start to even just do that once in a while. What you're communicating to your kid is you matter and I am interested in your thoughts. I'm still the parent, but I'm really interested, truly interested in your thoughts and what the experience is like for you. Because guess what? We don't know what the experience is like for them. We don't know what anybody else's experience is like, whether we think it or not. And we sometimes as parents, we have this idea that because we gave birth to people or adopted somebody or took someone on as a stepchild with full intention, that we know who they are and what's best for them. And it's possible that we don't. So toxic certainty is sniffed out really quick by kids, and it just doesn't. It does not bridge and it does not create mindful relating.
Well, in that example that you gave, mm-hmm. it does so much in that it recognizes that there could be a lot of reasons. Instead of us jumping to the conclusion that you spoke to me like that because you're a disrespectful child or whatever our thought is, or you wanted to hurt me or something, it may be a million other things. And by phrasing it this way, we allow them the opportunity. You know, but when they said something, they may have felt terrible the moment it came out of their mouth. We've certainly all done that. where we said something and you wish you could take it back before the last word even leaves your lips.
Yep.
So why couldn't that happen to our kids? You know, maybe it was they've had a horrific day and they came home to the people in the place where they're most comfortable and know they're loved. And that's when it came out. And it was actually a good thing because it means, you know, this is where they are, that they're comfortable with that. And it also, it gives them the opportunity to take a moment and look at what they did and evaluate it and go, oh, because they may not have even realized what they did. And it gives them a chance to think about it and go, why did I do that? And to experience their feelings around it. I really love the way that you went through that and the way that you worded that for us to be able to share with them.
Yeah, thank you. It's helpful.
I also, the other piece to this is you said, you know, this is hard to do. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Especially when, as you said, you know, we get triggered or we're tired or we've been round and round about the same thing 10,000 times, right? Mm-hmm. So it seems that this is also something that we can start practicing outside of these highly charged situations. That we can open up other conversations with them. You said, you know, we want to let them know that we appreciate them, that we do want to know what they think. We want to know how they feel about things. So those are questions and comments and things that we can carry into everyday conversations so that we are starting to plant that seed and water that seed before we get into a heated discussion. So one, it gives us a chance to practice, and two, that idea is already in our kids' head. Would that also be effective to be playing with that and practicing it when we're not in a heated exchange?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the more time that we can spend practicing mindful relating in less charged circumstances, it benefits everybody. And so a great place to start is practicing these things with, you know, friends or work colleagues, people with whom we are not as enmeshed emotionally. And practicing, and oh, by the way, it'll also, you know, improve your relationships at work. But because I do at corporate clients, I will, sometimes engage in the mindful relating ideas and talk about how, you know, company employees can more carefully relate with each other. So, but my point is, when you choose to practice them in less charged circumstances, then it's like anything else that, you know, you don't go, I don't know, I'm not an athlete, but like run a marathon, like you go do that a whole bunch of times first, right? And then you go do it in the big day. God forbid you don't practice first and then go to the big day. So I feel like the more, to your point, Sandy, the more we can practice these things just in everyday life with everybody. You know, you're at work and you're tired and someone says to you something and you say, oh my God, I don't have time right now. And you speak unkindly and whatever. And then maybe you go back an hour later, that person says and say, look, I snuffed you earlier and I just, you know, it wasn't my most shining moment and I apologize. I just had nothing to do with you. I'm having a challenging day. And here's the real answer to your question. Circling back is huge. And a lot of people miss the fact that that is actually a huge part of communication. Communication in the moment is almost definitionally emotionally charged. And emotions are important, but they can also make navigating the waters a little bit, they're rougher, right? They're rougher waters. So if we wait till the waters to calm down a little bit and then circling back is so healing for everybody. You know, when I get those texts from my son, when he's, you know, already gotten to school and saying, gee, you know, I could have done better this morning, I'm sorry. It fixes everything. You know, like I just feel so much better. I've got a young man that can say he's sorry and circle back and care about a relationship enough to circle back. It's really, really important. And, you know, another thing that I for some reason, this part of our discussion triggered for me. Have you ever heard of the book, Sandy, The Five Love Languages?
Oh, yes. I love it.
Love that book. And
yes.
And so important while we're navigating, you know, our relationship with teens and working to, you know, have less arguing and more constructive arguing and helping them learn to be full, whole people in arguing, right? Because it is going to happen. Knowing what their love languages are is really important. And we're all very different. You know, is it physical touch? Is it gifts? Is it acts of service? Is it quality time? And what's the other one? Words of affirmation, right? And everybody's so different. And the trick is we tend to give what we like, right? So I'm a total acts of service person. I love acts of service. But not all of my kids are acts of service people. Some of them, you know, one is totally a quality time person. Another one is a physical touch person. So I don't need to give them what they want. I need to give them what they need, right? To be affirmed that even when we argue, this relationship is important to me, whether that's, you know, a hug for the physical touch person or, you know, maybe folding up the laundry for the person that, you know, we had an argument yesterday and he was a total champ and coming back and saying he was sorry or in gracefully accepting my apology, you know, all of those things, it's all teaching. And I think it's helpful to us as parents, instead of, you know, kind of circling back to the what we said at the beginning, not to be unhappy with ourselves when we're having challenges with our kids. And that's way easier said than done, I recognize. Because in the moment we can feel, you know, pretty badly about ourselves, about the situation. Oh my God, my kid's a jerk, they're entitled, blah, blah, blah. But like giving ourselves the space to just recognize that this is, it's training, just like we train them to, you know, wash their sheets every week or two and, you know, not wear dirty underwear and brush their teeth and, you know, life lessons. And I think even saying that to ourselves, it takes a little bit of the charge out of argument, because it no longer becomes something personal that we're crappy parents or we're not doing the right thing, but just on their resume, it's what they have to do. And our job is to help them not only navigate their relationship with us and becoming an adult, but also teaching them how to disagree with respect and be mindful about it.
And it is. It's incredibly difficult. It's incredibly challenging. I also wanted to mention, so we actually had an episode on using the five love languages
with
your child. So I will link to that in the show notes. So yeah, anyone who hasn't heard that can go back and listen to it. We had a nice discussion about that. And, but as you said, you know, yes, we're teaching them, we're training them, but we're also teaching and training ourselves, because we're learning a new phase of parenting, and them pushing back and things like that goes back to our fears about them not being safe. It goes back to us having to learn that we may not know best for our child, or even if we do know best, that what we might need to do is let them make a mistake. It goes back to this idea of wanting to keep control over them. Mm-hmm. And that was just something that really struck me in your book, that conversation that you said, people become divided because they seek power over each other. Mm-hmm. And so what happens when we seek to have power over someone else?
Nothing good, right? Like, that's the short answer. But literally the point I made in the book is, you know, people seeking power over one another. This is really the root of a lot of disagreement and argument and unkindness, from nations to companies to politics to parenting to husband and wife or partners or anybody, right? And the most important thing, I think, out of that we can do, and this is, you know, I'm always all about noticing. Notice in the moment that you're having a disagreement or you're arguing, ask yourself, is this really about the thing that I say that I'm arguing about? Or is this just about my own insecurity and wanting to have power over somebody else? Because if it is about that, then it really has nothing to do with them and everything to do with me. Everything to do with me, my self-worth, the things I'm insecure about, the things that I'm afraid of happening. My kids are getting ready to leave the nest. What does that mean? Blah, blah, blah. So important is to simply start to notice and ask ourselves that question inside our own head. What is this really about? If it's about power, then you're going nowhere good.
And tying into that, which we've touched on to some degree, is drawing boundaries. And we've talked before about parents drawing boundaries, but you pointed out that our kids need to learn how to draw boundaries. And part of that is that they have to draw boundaries with us. Yep. And I see this as a place where we can end up again in that power struggle, because they're going, here's the line, here's the fence, do not come past here. And we're the parent going, oh no, my house, my child, I'm going to go wherever I want to go. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about this process of our kids drawing boundaries? Like, why is it important for them to draw boundaries, in particular with us?
Because we're the most important person in their life. And if they can't practice boundaries and boundary setting with us, then who on earth are they supposed to practice with? Because we're the safest ones, right? We're the ones to teach them. And the best way we can teach them is by being clear about our own boundaries. But then, and I'll give you an example. So let's, you know, I'm a very organized person. I have a plan and a process for everything. Like, I have been called anal before. And one of my kids is very much not like that. Literally fly by the seat of your pants for everything. And we kind of drive each other a little crazy. And in the beginning, I always thought it was, he drives me crazy. Well, guess what? I drive him bananas. Because it's just like, wow, dude, let's just worry about that when we get there, right? And so when it came time, he was interested in going to colleges his junior year and wanted to start looking. And so I started setting them up. And then he wanted me to cancel them. And I felt time was ticking away and we needed to get started. And I'm definitely not, in the grand continuum, like a pushy parent or someone that pushes kids to do something they're not ready to do. But in this particular case, because of this history of not planning, I was being kind of like, all right, let's go. Come on. And finally, he looked at me one day and he said, Mom, I want to go to college. I don't want to go to any more of these visits this year, his junior, because every time I'm out for a day, I have all this work piling up, which, oh, by the way, my junior year is the most important for colleges. And I feel like it just stresses me out more than anything. So I already know the colleges I'm interested in looking at. Can we please just look at them next year? And I was like, you know, I'm standing there and like your mouth open and closes a couple times, like, wow, sure, we can do that. Like, that's not how I would do it, I'm thinking to myself. But that's how he wants to do it, and it's his journey, and it's okay, and it's enough time, right? So just because he was setting a boundary with me that, like, you running my college search is not okay with me the way you mm-hmm. want to do it. I want to do it my way. Definitionally, it's my college search. And yes, I need your help. And yes, I don't have a license yet, so you need to drive me. But can we please do it in a way that's comfortable for me? And so that was really clear boundary setting, and I actually really appreciated it once I was able to just bite my tongue and really, again, have that, okay, what I'm interested in with my son is connection. I want to connect. So is what he's saying, even though it may not be the way I would do it, is it a valid way of doing things? Can he function in life doing that? Sure he can. Lots of people do. Not in a way that's comfortable for me, but it's not my journey. So I think it's important for kids to be able to practice setting boundaries with their parents. And you know, not ridiculous ones, right? But that's not a ridiculous boundary. That's actually incredibly valid.
Well, and it was interesting because there was some back and forth too, right? There was, he was setting boundaries. You were also setting boundaries, because part of them learning to set boundaries is also learning how to deal with it when people give some pushback. I'm not talking about steamrolling over them mm-hmm. and saying no way, no how, mm-hmm. but asking questions. You talked earlier about being curious, and that's one of our Mighty Parenting core principles, right? Is live curious, because that's what we need to. So it's perfectly reasonable when they draw a boundary to go, tell me more about that. What are you thinking? Why do you want that? What's important about that to you? To ask some questions and things, and to even draw a boundary of our own in response to their boundary. Because that's a healthy back and forth. And I also was seeing boundaries as, like, this was like a very thought out, you know, well thought out kind of a situation. But I can also see our kids drawing boundaries in the simple thing of just going like, I got this,
mm-hmm.
which again is parents. So we need to honor that, but it doesn't mean that we have to just drop it. If we are concerned, if we think that there is something that could be detrimental to our child, but it's going to that curious place. And tell me if I'm wrong. I'm kind of thinking out loud as I'm listening to you.
I'm nodding as you're talking.
Okay.
Can't see that.
So I can see us going, you know, hey mom, I got this. Go. Yeah. I hear you.
Yep.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you have it, or what your thoughts are, or your plan is? And that's kind of their boundary was, stop telling me what to do, mm-hmm. to which we are respectful enough to go, okay, I'm not going to tell you what to do, and I need to know more about what you're planning.
Exactly.
Is that healthy boundaries?
Totally. Yeah, that's okay. About, because, you know, if they were really ready to just go make all the decisions by themselves, they wouldn't be living with us anymore. Right? But they
right.
still, you know, some schools of thought say that it's the teenagers that really need us even more than the little guys do, right? Because they're spreading the winds, because they're, you know, treading in territory that has, you know, higher risk and return and all that stuff. So I think that setting boundaries, encouraging them, allowing, encouraging, being curious, I love the way you put that, is really important for them, so that when they do, when they're in college or out, you know, they've learned a trade and they're a plumber and they have their own apartment and they're 20 years old, that they've already learned all these things and they can navigate with us not around. That's why we have to encourage them to set boundaries with us, you know, again, ones that are safe and good and, you know, not entirely disrespectful, just, you know, from one human being to another. And helping them exercise that and learn it as a skill.
Okay, so bottom line, we want them to learn how to set boundaries while being respectful of the family values.
Mm-hmm.
And to model that for them. So we want to also be setting boundaries steeped in our family values.
Yeah.
And then recognizing that this arguing, this pushing back, all of this is a good, healthy, natural process. And we as parents just, we have to learn how to go through this next stage. This is a new stage of parenting. There are developmental stages to our kids, and each one requires that we learn a different way of parenting because they are developing, and we don't want to stunt that. We want to encourage it.
Totally. And I would also add to that, it was a perfect, beautiful recap. And I would add to that, that when you're setting boundaries outside of your relationship with them, like someone says, hey, can you be president of the basketball association? You're like, no, I can't because, you know, I'm doing this and, you know, whatever. You say, no, I can't. You know, the no word that a lot of us hate to say. Bring that up at dinner discussion, like randomly. So that your kid sees, oh, wow, that's how you set boundaries. Like they're just listening. Or make sure you tell your friend about it on the phone where they can overhear you. Oh, yeah, they asked me to do this, but you know, we already have this, this, and this in our play as a family. And although I really like to help the organization out, I felt it important to set boundaries and be really clear about where I want to spend my time. And so it's, in addition to doing it with the child, also letting them see how we set boundaries in other areas of our life. And in order for that us to do that, we also need to get better about setting boundaries that help us live a healthy, balanced life. And then you're teaching them that.
Yeah. And there's a whole nother show. I actually have a whole talk I do just on saying no.
Yay.
Yeah. So yes. And basically I'm in my brain, I kind of summed up what you just said is tell stories.
Yep.
Whether you're having family dinner, you do highs and lows, you're on a bike ride or something, you can just say, I had such an uncomfortable moment earlier today, or I'm so proud of myself that I did this. It's hard for me to do this, and just kind of tell the story without obviously being pointed about it. Lori, this has been such a great conversation. We will have, of course, a link to your book in the show notes and your website. But for anyone who wants to learn more from you, would you please share your website?
Sure. Yep. It's LoriWarren.com. That's LoriWarren.com. And my book is up there, and the work I do with companies and individuals as well.
Well, thank you so much, Lori, for all these great insights. Yeah. Such a different perspective on these teen years. I think it was very eye-opening.
Thank you. And thank you for being such a great, you know, it was a great conversation back and forth. And I love a lot of the things you said.
Well, thank you. And Mighty Parents, thank you for being here. If you enjoyed this conversation, let somebody else know about it. Share it with a friend or two or three. And of course, as I always ask, if you could take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review the show, that also helps us get this information out to other parents so they can have a better parenting journey as well. Thank you so much for joining us today, for being part of the Mighty Parenting community. And remember that you are a mighty parent. You got this. I will see you next week.